Spirit.com.
WIOX is supported by Margaretville Hospital and Mountainside Residential Care Center, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, offering compassionate care at a CMS nursing home. More information at 845-586-1800.
Hi, I'm Don Matheson, host of Vantage Point, heard every other Friday at 1 o'clock here on WIOX Roxbury. Live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20. And everywhere at WIOXradio.org.
Okay, we are live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and on MTC Cable Channel 20, everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear, and on any smart device with the TuneIn or FM.radio apps. I don't know what an app is. John, do you have the FM radio app? I've been reading this thing for 5 years.
I do not.
Okay. This is from the...
I don't have it either.
Yeah. Well, that's three of us. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John since 2010. And I think this is show 470, but every third Wednesday, we talk to Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead from Fruitful Furnishing Sawmill and Gary Mead Gallery over there in Arkville.
Margaretville. Well, I live in Arkville, but the... You know, a lot of stuff was actually composed in Arkville, but the mill and the gallery is in Margaretville.
Right. Gotcha. Margaretville.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I know where that is.
Margaretville, Arkville, it's all the same to me.
That's right. And, yeah, Gary, how you been?
I've been awesome. How about you?
Yeah, I've been fine.
Things are good. Things
yeah.
are...
Weather's nice.
Weather's nice. Business is great. Yeah. I don't have employees anymore. I couldn't be happier. And... You know, the daily drama is out of my life.
Well, don't you miss Days of Our Lives? I mean, that's a good show.
I don't know. I used to watch that when I was maybe 8, 9 years old. I don't think I've watched it since. Stuff like that never intrigued me too much. I was always too busy out in the forest running stone walls and, you know, tapping trees and milking cows. And
I always took you for chasing, a General Hospital kind
chasing
of
down fish. Yeah. And deer and woodchucks. Yeah. I told these guys a couple woodchuck stories. I won't share them on the air, but, yeah. You know, woodchucks were the enemy back in the day. But now they're just cute little critters that I trap and catch and release.
Right.
You know, I don't like them eating my vegetables. Now, I've been living in Arkville for 36 years, and this is the first year I've ever had a deer on my property in Arkville. And I went to Paradox Lake about 3-4 weeks ago and spent a Thursday to Sunday afternoon there, and come home and pulled in the driveway, and it was like horrifying. There was a deer standing in my garden.
No.
On the inside. I have a 5-foot fence around it, and I've always kept woodchucks and out of it, and, you know, varmints like that, but never in my life I ever seen a deer. And then I drive up my driveway coming home, and it ate some things, but, you know, I come up with a way. I didn't have to put an 8-foot fence up. I come up with an extraordinary, I threw pallets around, all around the garden, and it won't walk on the pallets. It was coming, actually, to eat apples.
Yeah.
It cleaned up my spinach and my Swiss chard pretty good, but the Swiss chard come back. There was no help for the spinach. Spinach don't regrow like just Swiss chard, but, I mean, it didn't have a chance to get much more. But, you know, I live off my garden, and that's my livelihood. And, you know, I was talking to the neighbor, and he said, yeah, you know, maybe we could, you know, take it out with our crossbow. And I said, with my luck, I'd shoot that thing. I'd run into the middle of County Route 38, drop dead, and Vern Bauer would drive up.
Yeah.
So I said, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, not a good idea, Gary.
Because, you know, I play everything by the law. I never jack deer or anything like that. A lot of people in New Kingston used to. But, you know, if I can't get it illegally, I'm not going to get it.
Yeah. Well, you know.
So we're talking about black walnut tonight, and it's an exciting topic because the black walnuts right now, you know,
wait a second. We didn't even ask John. We gotta ask John. Oh, how
you doing, John?
I'm here.
He's getting married.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Right. Announce it to the world, I guess.
The 12th of September, right?
Yeah. You want to get GPS location.
No, he set the date last summer, and it's still on, he told me a few minutes ago. So
well,
it's drastically changed. Yeah. Things aren't going to happen the way they were planned, so we're planning a whole new wedding in 6 weeks, so it's fun.
Cool. Yeah. Well,
pretty crazy, but hey, it'll happen.
The end result is all going to be the same.
That's right. That's right. But I've been good. I've been starting to pay attention to the deer. I love October, November, and August gets me, my hairs start to turn up.
You get giddy, yeah.
I get ready.
Good for you, yeah.
So in the last week and a half or so, I really started to pay attention to habits of the deer and what they're doing.
Well, you know, opening day of deer season, it changes. I mean, bow season, they don't get quite so...
Well, the thing is, the season's so long, so...
Yeah.
I mean, from October 1st through the second week of December is all, in some type of season, legal to take a deer. So if you start looking in August and paying attention, I just use it for an excuse to go for a hike.
Yeah.
And then it just gets my brain in tune. And then when October 1st is there, I'm already kind of in tune to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I use it as an excuse to
go for
walks.
Son Mitch, he's like you. He gets all ready and, you know, he has a tire up at camp that, you know, 100 yards, he pulls a string, it goes down a 12-foot ramp, and he puts a piece of cardboard in the middle of it, and he can shoot that thing and hit it 3 times while it's rolling before it disappears into the grass. Because, you know, he's a big buck hunter, and he, 90% of all the deer he sees, he jumps out of a bed, and they're, like, running. So he shoots running deer, and I never got a deer that big. I really have no, you know, maybe I can get one off my porch in New Kingston when I move up there, but, you know, I'm not traveling up the Adirondacks and hiking.
Well, in order to get a deer that big, you gotta one, be looking for them, but two, pass up on other deer.
That and, you know, time that, you know, I'd rather be working on furniture than hunting. And actually, when I'm hunting, I'm always sidetracked by, I look at the trees and the configuration of limbs and the growth. And, you know, a lot of deer, I'll probably walk by me and I'll be looking up. And
they're
I'll
probably
go,
looking up, seeing what the hell you're looking at.
There's that dummy again. I get by him easy enough.
Yeah, right.
Last year, I had a nice seven. Well, I think it was a seven pointer. It was at least good six, big high rack. And, you know, I was walking along and I leaned my gun up against a tree and I'm taking a leak. And as soon as I pulled out to release, I heard snort and a deer was running. So, you know, I'm running to get my gun. You know, it's a kind of a obscene thing. But, you know, by the time I got to my gun, he was, you know, out of sight. And I said, son of a gun, you know, ain't that just my luck? And that was a lucky deer because we weren't that far apart. And if I had my gun in hand, he would have been a goner. But, you know, the spirits looked out for the deer and not me that day. But that's fine. I'm good. Yeah. Mitch is such a good hunter that I don't, you know, he gets doe permits and we fill them. And, you know, I have venison year round and, you know, I like venison. So that's why I hunt. And I don't enjoy killing a deer, but I enjoy the harvest and, you know, beef and pork and all that stuff in the store. It's almost unconsumable.
Unconsumable?
You know. Yeah, it's hard to consume because it gives you, it's so full of everything you don't really, your body you don't like. Same thing with the vegetables. I mean, that's why I grow my own garden because, you know, if the bugs get ahead of me in my gardening, I let them take the plants rather than put some poison on them that I'm going to ingest in my system and give myself something that it's going to cost me $100,000 to get rid of or more. So, you know, I kind of skip that. But, you know, I've been very lucky and very fortunate. It's in a 40 by, oh, it's about 40 feet wide by 50 feet long, a garden, and I grow a year's worth of vegetables in my garden. Yeah. I don't buy vegetables from the store anymore. The only thing I have to buy is fruit. And I started, since the pandemic, I started canning that because that was the only reason I had to go to the store. You know, every 3 weeks was to get, you know, a few bananas and some pears and peaches or whatever was in season. But now I've been buying them when they go on sale and canning them. And I like canning. It's a beautiful thing. And you can keep stuff for 3 or 4 years after you can it. And, you know, now, you know, this winter when this pandemic thing is, I'm just confused about it. I have no opinion about it. I don't like to talk about it, but it is what it is, and, you know, I'm just confused, so, you know, I have no opinion. I don't think too much about what it is, and, you know, I never went out in public a lot anyway, so that part doesn't bother me. It's just that when you do go out, you got to be extra careful, and I'm just unsure. Like I say, I'm confused, so I can't speak about it. But let's talk about black walnut and happy things.
Yeah, I sure as hell don't want to talk about that. But
black walnut is it's one of our monumental trees. We don't have many on the side of the hill. But you get over down by the Hudson and right down through New Jersey and anywhere along a river, they seem to do very well. And I know my son has property over in Accord, and Mitch is down in Gardner, and that whole corridor is full of catalpas and shagbark hickories and walnuts. And I get giddy, like John does with hunting. I get with trees, and I don't know what it is about it, but I get goosebumps when I drive by a beautiful tree. And, you know, as I'm driving, I'm always looking, I distinguish where I'm going by different trees. I don't know the name of the town particularly, but I know what trees grow there. I said, oh, you know where those big catalpa trees are. You know, when I go to Max's, I kept missing Acorn Hill coming back from Max's. But there's like 6 or 8 beautiful, huge catalpa trees there. Because the Acorn Hill is on a little curve there, and as soon as I see the catalpas, I know I have to turn. So I put my blinker on, because you can see them above the curve in the road.
Oh, yeah. No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And so, you know, so when I see those catalpas, I put my blinker on, and I'm ready to turn up Acorn Hill and get back home. On the way over there, it's easy to find it, but the way back, it's right on a corner, and But black walnut is, I mean, it's a faster growing tree than I thought, you know, years ago when we discovered it.
Yeah,
I mean, started talking about it.
Yeah. And,
you know, because I've been on this show since 2012. And, you know, we've done a few shows. I've missed a few here and there along the way, but not too many. I try not to miss them because this is one of my favorite hours of the month. And, you know, to educate, my goal in life at this point, at the age of 65, is to teach people as much as I can about how awesome our forests and landscape are, where we live. That's basically unrealized by 90% of the population that come here and live here. And, you know, that's why I write children's books, and that's why I have, you know, gallery tours. I haven't had any this summer because of, you know, the situation. But, you know, it's all, I still have visitors, and, you know, I'll spend an hour, hour and a half with somebody walking through the gallery and explain stuff to them. And, you know, if you haven't been to the gallery, you know, get your butt down there because it's an educational place. It isn't a place where, you know, I mean, you might look at some of the prices on some of the pieces and, oh, you know, it's not for you. I mean, most of the pieces that I compose, I couldn't afford. But, you know, the only reason I have them is because I handcraft them. But, you know, the floor and the murals in the gallery and, you know, 16 local trees, it's a folk art drawing, and you know, you can see the difference between, you know, because butternut and black locust have the same type of leaf configuration.
Yeah.
Except for one little thing, one lines up, I don't know what you call it in school, but one of them,
what's that, twig pattern,
the patterns of the leaves on the stem.
I don't know about the leaves, to be honest. The leaves to me, they're very serrated on a black walnut and compound, meaning more than one leaflet on a leaf.
Right. There's.
But you know how I identify them? If you crack a twig of black walnut and you're confused whether it's a hickory, the walnut is so much more fragrant.
Or butternut.
Even butternut. You're going to know it's a walnut, and then we can get into deciphering between white walnut and black walnut or butternut. But it's so fragrant, it's like something tropical almost, mm-hmm. The black walnut smell.
Well, the leaves are tropical because of the, I mean, there's always an odd number.
Citrusy almost,
there's,
you know?
There's two, 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 and then there's always one in the middle on the end. But the butternuts, I think they line up. And
I don't know about that.
The walnuts are staggered.
Yeah.
What do you call that, John? You went to college.
Well, there's opposite and alternate.
Right.
Is that opposite and alternate.
But they're both alternate twig pattern. Now, the leaves, I can't say for sure, but both hickory and walnut are both alternate. Now, if it's compound and it's opposite, it's probably an ash tree.
Well, hickory don't look anything like a walnut leaf.
Yeah, but if you're not used to seeing them together, you might confuse them because, you know, there's right. Not many walnuts to look at up here in the mountains.
Probably.
Now, in Margaretville, there are. There's a lot of baby walnuts growing and large walnuts too.
Yeah, down
and
the,
white walnuts.
In the valley, there's quite a few big ones.
There's actually, by the pavilion, there's quite a bit of black walnut, actually,
there's
and
probably,
white walnut.
Well, there's down by the pavilion, an older guy, probably 25 years ago, planted a couple black walnuts there, and Pavilion Road is, I'll bet there's 75 walnut trees down through there right now.
I believe it's a perfect site for walnut. You know
beautiful.
Where you find them is in deep alluvial soils. That's where they grow really fast and can outcompete other trees.
Yeah.
And if I had to pick one place where I've seen more walnut growing than anywhere else in my life, it would be the Delaware Water Gap on Route 209.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because it's deep alluvial soil. And it's abandoned farmland, so they started growing, and it sends out that juglone and chemical that kills other trees,
mm-hmm.
natural herbicide. And according to Mark Abrams, who we've had on this show, there's a lot of correlations between Native American settlements and black walnuts. You know, it's kind of like that legacy that's there. You know, the seed's got to come from somewhere. It's literally a heavy nut that doesn't travel that far.
Right, yeah.
So it's got to come from somewhere. And there's just a ton of it. The pure stands of black walnut. On 209 there.
And
if you ever get the chance, drive through Route 209 there.
They're beautiful. But,
Pennsylvania.
You know, I was telling you before, I shut my dimension mill down last October. And you know, so when I was buying low grade back then, I mean, 2 years before that, I was paying, because I dealt in the dimension mill, and we would buy low grade and cut the crap out and you know, whatever. But when I, 2 years before I went out, I was paying $290 a thousand for low grade, three common, basically, two and three common lumber. And, it, you know, it was up and down a little bit. Sometimes you go down to 270, sometimes 320. But, you know, the last year that I was in business, it creeped up to $650 a thousand for, you know, well, it's mostly two common, but it you know, went on all of three common.
You explain that, 1,000 board feet?
A 1,000 board feet, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you mean by common? And that's just the grading?
The common is a, and I found out from Mark from Tri-State that, you know, I called him 2 weeks ago and I wanted to get from their yard down there some black walnut logs to saw because I heard, man, low grade's down. I love low grade, so I was going to buy some. I said, I need some two or three common logs. He goes, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. He said, there's number ones and number twos in logs. He said, when you saw it, the grading is altogether different. And I said, well, you know, okay, so I guess I want number twos.
Yeah.
So he said, just go down the yard and mark them. So I went down last Friday. And I put GM on the end of some black walnut logs that were kind of squirrely looking and, you know, just what I want. And, you know, but I found out walnut is the only, you know, because I called up to Johnson Brothers up in Casanova. I've been buying lumber from for the past 30-some years. And you know, prices up and down. You know, last October was up $650,000. And, you know, that's when I went out and... And I talked to him like a month ago, and he said, "Oh, we can't even give low grade away. We're struggling to get $250,000 for it. That's $250 for 1,000 board feet, which is 25 wow. cents a board foot,
jeez.
Which is unbelievable." So I said, "Oh my God, lumber's down. Now's the time to buy logs."
Yeah.
So I found out walnut didn't budge. So walnut is one of the walnut and cherry, and really nice hard maple didn't move. So, but you know, it's a soft the red maple and whatnot. They the low grade and all.
So actually, so what's walnut worth?
30%. The it's $1 a board foot and up. So it's $1,000 a thousand and up for crappy logs.
Wow.
And so, but, you know, the crappy logs and, you know, I just harvested, well, I was driving down the road through Arkville the other day and somebody cut down a cherry tree and it was all red rotted down the inside and they were slabbing off chunks of this thing and I drove by and I seen them cutting it and I pulled in and I go, oh my God, what are you doing with that? And they go, oh, we're going to throw it over the bank. I said, put it in my truck. That stuff is beautiful. Because, you know, all I saw was table bases. You know, you kiln dry it, and you peel. I mean, if you take a solid log, it's really hard to get the center out. But when it's all red rot, you just bring it down, you kiln dry it. The wood on the outside shrinks. The bark falls right off, and the center just falls right out. You do a little cleaning up with the chainsaw because, you know. But I use hollow trees, and I see beauty in... And stuff that isn't really 90% of what I have in the gallery, the furniture that I make, is out of stuff that logger wouldn't even pull it out of the woods. I mean, it isn't worth nothing. But, you know, you spend time with it, and I see, you know, when you look at a tree, you see a tree. When I look at a tree, I see many things. And, you know, that's how my mind goes. And I had... tree surgeons like come to me and you know were bringing me stuff that they were cutting and it had me look at a tree that was standing that they were going to cut and they asked me how I would cut it and I would say well that and this and I said I would have never cut it that way and I said well you don't see it in the same you know my mind just works different and you know, I thought my mind was the same as everybody else's all through my life until about 10 years ago. And then I realized, man, this is not a curse, it's a passion, and I've been running with it ever since. And you know, I really like it, and it's things are selling in the gallery. I'm making new stuff. I'm coming up with new ideas every day, and you know, it's exciting. When I was running the Dimension Mill, I couldn't come up with new ideas because time the help got done with me from morning to night, they beat the crap out of me. I mean, in the old days, it wasn't like that, but the new age workforce has a lot to be desired. They punish their employers. They threaten them and blah, blah, this and that, and it just becomes no fun anymore. And, but, you know, basically, you know, I have one apprentice, and she's 19 years old, and she wants to build houses, and I'm teaching her furniture, you know, different things. You know, we just got done building black walnut boxes to hold my screws with, you know, thin paneling for the sides. And, you know, I would always go and buy, you know, like 1,000 screws in a box. And, you know, you pick the box up and screws fall out the bottom. What a pain in the neck it was. So I said, oh, Anna, why don't you make these? I built one in front of her, and I said, now I need 6 more of them. So we have these walnut screw boxes that, you know, that are beautiful, and they'll never wear out. So I take those cheap cardboard boxes, and I buy 1,000. They fit right, 1,000 screws fit in each box. And you know, we can bring it out, and when we use them, you know, screws don't fall on the floor and all over the place. And it's a beautiful thing. But black walnut is a very stable wood. The nuts are, I mean, the meat is so good for you, but it's a lot of work getting those things to open up. It's I've tried hitting them with a torch. I've tried running over them, you know, with a sled, you know, hitting them with a sledgehammer. The problem with a heavy hammer is,
you break them.
It crumbles them, and then you have, I mean, you're trying to eat the meat, and it smashes the meat as well as, you know, the outside. But when these things are fall off the tree, they're this big round green ball, and then when they get on the ground, they start deteriorating, and the outside will dry up. And if you pick them up without gloves and harvest them, your hands will turn, it'll stain your hand black. It's a very strong stain. They use it in, I mean, black walnut stain is basically the oil from those husks that are wrapped in the around the nut. That they put them, I think they accelerate the drying process, because when they shrink down and fall off the nut, and when they're dry, they're still very oily and full of that dye. And they pull the dye out, and you know, they use it for dyeing clothes. They use it for dyeing a lot of stuff. And they put it in stains. A walnut stain is actually part of a walnut tree. It's not a color. A cherry stain is a color. A maple stain is a color. And of all the stains, the one that confuses me the most is the maple, because it don't look anything like maple. It looks more like, I don't know, it's an amber color. And maple, over time, it will be amber. When you saw hard or soft maple, it's white when you saw it. And, you know, over time, it oxidizes and it becomes that amber color. And the same thing with tulip, poplar, and other woods. Walnut is probably the only wood, I think there's another one, but, you know, we're talking about walnut tonight. But, you know, it lightens with age because off the saw, it's black. I mean, that stuff, and that the lumber, when it's green, will stain your hands. And
when you first cut it, it turns a green color.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is black walnut with Gary Mead. We talk to Gary every third Wednesday from Fruitful Furnishing Sawmill and Gary Mead Gallery. And we're going to take a break, but usually we play some country songs. We didn't get to do it last week. We got to play some motivational songs, man, you know?
Let's
songs like
on.
That they would
Come
play
on,
before sporting events or something. So there you go.
Let's
Here
get
we go.
Revved up, people.
It's the final countdown, man. It's a great beginning.
Yeah.
You know? So, remember Isaac? Isaac used to like that song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Before Apple Tree Bernie. Try to motivate yourself when it's like, you know, 10 degrees out, 20 mile per hour
sideways, and yeah, we got to go climb a tree.
And you got to go climb a tree that has filled with snow. And the only way to get it off is just scampering all over it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Those days are coming.
Well, yeah.
That's why we're mountain men.
Yeah, I don't mind it. As long, you know, it's nice when it's like 20 and no wind. It's like perfect. It's a perfect temperature.
And the sun might be out, you know. And the wintertime sun is very warm, actually. And
as long as there's not too much snow, because then you need shades, man. I learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
Where I know just where I was. That guy's property over in Bovina, man. He's got that snow reflecting would burn your eyeballs out.
I was the only one that could work. It was Ryan and Nick were in the shade of the barn because I had shades and they didn't.
Mm-hmm. I can't see anymore.
It blinded.
It was really bad.
It affected me for a good month or two afterwards. My eyes, I don't think they ever fully recovered from that.
Really? It was definitely
a bright day. Terrible. The thought of it, even thinking about it, makes me see light in the back of my head. Like I can still visualize it.
Ryan's seeing spots. We're going to send him to the bathroom.
Yeah. No, that was...
Just splash some water on your face.
Last year was rain, you know? It was rain, like these rainy days. I mean, we didn't have much snow, which makes the pruning kind of easier in some ways. But the rain,
it was always 36.
36, that's what it was. 36 every day.
And that's cold. That's a cold rain.
It was 36 so much, Gary, I thought my thermometer in my new truck was broken.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think it
that
works.
That thing stuck.
I thought maybe like where it was and how it was like, you know. Like how you're driving was just that pinned at 36. No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Because then summer happened. It warmed up.
Yeah. Well, he would always ask me because we have the same truck. And I said, mine's 36 too.
Yeah.
That's not yours.
Anyway, they're both broke.
They're both broke. Yeah, Toyota's got to figure this out.
But anyway, I told him after the song come on, that, you know, I talked to... you know, before I had my own sawmill, I talked to sawmill owners and this and that. And, you know, over on the other side of the hill, I talked to a couple of, you know, Beecher Smith and those guys that were sawing over there. And they sawed quite a fair amount. Now, not a huge amount, but they sawed, you know, they had 5-6-man crews on, and they sawed logs constantly. And whenever they got black walnut in, because they did get harvested over on that side, and he said, you know, all the guys' hands would turn... get stained black from handling the walnut. He said, right after we got done with the walnut, he said, I'd run a batch of hard maple and that sucked the stain right out of the hands of the
Which
walnut.
Side of the mountain were they getting walnut? Where was this mountain?
They were down by, you know, over on the Pine Hill side.
Oh, okay.
You know, down along the river, down by the Hudson, you know.
But they must have been getting it from further down the Esopus because, I mean, walnut, but geez, there's not much walnut until you hit... I'd guess really Shokan.
Well, John Hoko, the old man, he lived in Fleischmann's. And he did a lot of logging. And he used to go down Allenville and, you know, along the Hudson. And he got some of the most beautiful walnut I've seen, you know, is what he harvested. But, you know, back 40, 45 years ago, man, there were huge trees to be had. And,
yeah,
you know, nobody knew anything much about it, but
and like I said, they really hug those stream flats. Like, and it doesn't have to be the biggest stream. Where I hunt in Gardner, for example, is a little stream that comes off the Shangham Ridge, and there's walnut along the stream. But where I grew up in Gardner, there's no walnut. There's none.
And there's no water there.
There's no water. We're up on the slope above the Walk Hill, and it's on the slope of the ridge. There's not one walnut. To speak
well, around 28A going out, you know, around the reservoir. There's quite a few around there.
Again, you're back in that stream flat, and you'll find it along the East Branch Delaware. Like I said, there's more butternut than black walnut.
Yeah,
you know, which they got a disease.
Well, I have a lot of gallery visitors now. There's no, you know, we don't have any butternuts around here. And I said, you probably, you know, what. I asked him, where did you come from? Oh, we come through Margaville. I said, you pass at least 150, 200 butternut trees on your way here.
Actually, there's more here than most places.
I know. And they're actually not doing too bad.
Guy from the Forest Service called our office maybe 12, 14 years ago and was shocked at how many white walnuts we had.
Yeah.
Because most of theirs, he said, were dead in the Midwest and Nebraska, where the hell he was.
You find them up out of the streams, too.
Yeah, up on the mountain sometimes.
You'll get them 100 or 200 feet in elevation above the stream bottom.
I found one in Woodstock when I was bushwhacking. I don't know why I did this. I just bushwhacked up the mountain one day to Alder Bark Mountain, which is just, you know, kind of a random mountain. And it was a scree slope getting towards the top. Butternut was there.
Wow.
Couldn't believe it.
Well, we cut that one at the top of in Denver there. That was like, what, 2,300 feet in elevation? 22?
Yeah, right.
It was dead.
Yeah,
that's why we
cut
it.
Way up there. Right.
Yeah, really far.
Well, when we went to Paradox Lake, we took a hike. It was, about a 2-mile hike up a mountain, and you could overlook, and we could see Paradox Lake and Schoon Lake. And we got to the top of the mountain, and I'm looking, and I said, Mitch, I can't believe what I'm seeing. You know what that is? And he goes, no. And I said, it's a butternut, but it's dead. It was right on top of that mountain.
Unreal.
And so on the way back down, I started paying attention. I said, well, if there's one up here, there's got to be more.
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know, take my time, go off trail too much. I just walked slower down than I went up, because I was interested in, you know, what trees grew there. And a lot of, I saw at least maybe a dozen, 14 butternuts just along the trail on my way down out of there, and said, holy smoke, they're growing up in here. But anyway, and another thing I saw on that hike was, you don't see many.
Where is that? In the Adirondacks?
That was up in the Adirondacks.
I'm surprised there's any up there. Paradox. I wouldn't know that.
No, that's why I was so surprised.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
I saw that dead one right on the top of the mountain, and I couldn't believe it was up there. So I started paying attention on the way down. I didn't see any walnuts down actually by the lake, and around the lake there were some walnuts, but not up on the mountain. But I hadn't seen. When I was raised on the farm, we had one shagbark maple, which is a red maple that gets a shaggy bark. It's a soft maple.
Really slow-growing red maple.
Yeah. And I must have saw at least 24 of them on that hike that day. And I never saw that many shagbark maples and you know, one that close together in my entire life. Hmm. And I know Joe Hewitt. He's in his 80s now. And I talked to him about... Oh, I go see him every once in a while, but we sit up there and sip some brandy or whatever.
Some poison.
And we poison. We try to poison ourselves the best we can.
See what the dosage is.
And he goes, he started talking to me. He said, I saw this tree, he said, you know, last week, and he said, had shaggy bark, and I saw it was a hickory, and I walked up to it, and he was about to ask me what I thought it was, and I said, before I even said, I said, that was a shagbark maple.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, that's exactly what it was, because he said the leaves were shaped like a maple. And I said, yeah, we don't, I mean, up on in New Kingston, that isn't even there anymore, but, you know, we had this big shaggy bark maple by the sap house. We put 5 buckets on that, and that thing would run sap, and filled 5 buckets. I don't care if it was below freezing, above freezing, the wind out of the south. The whole sap bush wouldn't run, and that tree overflowed the buckets about every day. Well, and the only reason we tapped it is because it ran so much sap. But you can get sap from black walnut, too. And
yeah, it tastes pretty good, too, actually.
Yeah. Mitch and Steph, they were up. They went up the Adirondacks an hour above where we stayed the day before and stayed there, and they found a little place up there that was making black walnut syrup and selling it. And I said, well, where is it? Oh, we didn't buy any. And I said, well, just give me the address. I'll go get some myself. Because I'd like to, you know, my first tree book, Sweet Sap, is about, you know, 4 local trees we get sap from to make syrup. And black walnut's one of them, and I think, you know, those books might, you know, be interested. They might be interested in taking, you know, some up there.
It might be the Maple Research Center up there, Gary, up in the Adirondacks. I know they were making it because I saw them in Verona. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is black walnut. Gary Mead, I got one more motivating song.
Let's go.
I got to do it. I need some motivation. Something. Sounds like a Tasmanian devil who's a rock and rolling Tasmanian devil. wasn't he? Jesus Christ, how does he scream like that?
Oh, my God, it's amazing. But, you know, it takes a lot of practice.
Yeah, you're listening to From the Forest, and every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Talking to Mr. Gary Mead, like we do every third Wednesday. And tonight's tree is black walnut. So you got something to read, Gary?
Yeah, I thought, with those inspirational songs, I was going to read People and Trees tonight, but I wrote this one 4/19/2014 at 4 a.m. I had a sleepless night, and this is just like kind of an inspirational thing, but I wrote this poem at 4 o'clock in the morning, and by 4:30 I had this thing finished, and I fell asleep till about 5:30, a quarter to 6. I woke up, and it was like I slept all night. It was just amazing. But it's called 10 Fish on the Ceiling. I closed my eyes to go to sleep. Was a bit restless, so I tried counting sheep. Saw barns, silos, tractors and wagons. Saw airplanes, tanks. Heard sirens of warning. Thought of many beautiful songs. My mind was not fixed on one thing at all. Saw mountains, rivers, waterfalls. Faces of people, fat, skinny, short, and tall. Many tree species went through my thoughts. Thought of love, peace, anger, and hate. Saw the oceans sending waves to the shores. Sandy and rocky beaches kept me in awe. Thought of the story of Noah and the ark. Saw miles of mammals and birds all in a row. Thought of life after death, heaven and hell. Saw the clouds, blue skies, sun and the moon. Felt the power of sleet, hail, thunder, and rain. Heard a noise and heard silence at the same time. Thought of money, bankers, stocks, and bonds. Saw the colors of people in a rainbow shape. Imagine that freedom really is free. Saw millions of numbers floating on strings, many miles of roads, country, and city streets. Thought of friends, enemies, smiles, and frowns. Had a vision of the earth from outer space. And the last thing I remember, as I fell asleep, there were 10 fish on the ceiling, all talking to me. And that's my poem for the night.
You know, it makes me think of a little bit of optimism. And sometimes, sadly, I feel like people don't want to hear optimism or optimistic things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading a book right now, and I've written an article about it, and I'm reluctant to release it because I don't know how it's going to be taken. And I don't usually care, but I usually give people it anyway.
Yeah.
But because I usually, you know, mostly write for myself. It makes me feel better, to be honest.
Yeah.
Some ways.
Well, I write to make myself understand things better, too. You know?
But this author, he's saying... And he had something really phenomenal to say. There's some bad things going on in the environment, and I've seen even second graders talking about how the world's going to end and all this. And, you know, I saw that when I was at a school in Phoenicia, and these kids are writing about, you know, the environment and how terrible it was at second grade. But in any case, this guy has made me aware of something that's so phenomenal. Our population since 1930 has increased by like 5 times or something.
Mm-hmm.
He goes into the numbers. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. And yet we farm on 25% of the land that we did then.
Now.
That means our forest has grown.
Right.
Astronomically. And if that isn't phenomenal, if that is not something to say, you know what? That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That is a modern marvel.
Yeah.
But you say that, and a lot of people want to argue with it. It's like, can't we just admit something good happened? I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Oh, I love every day I get up in the morning, and I know how crappy things are out there, but you can't, what are you going to do? Watch the news and go through the world that day in a misinformed, anger mood. You know, I don't watch the news or the weather anymore. I exempt it from my life, and I feel so much happier, and I get up, and if the world ends at 4 o'clock, I didn't know about it, so 4 o'clock, I'm not going to worry from 8 in the morning or 6 in the morning till 4 o'clock about the world ending. You know, at 4 o'clock, it's going to end, and boom, I'm going to go out happy.
Yeah.
So, but we can't, we got to try to help. I do my part. I don't litter. I don't pollute. There isn't one thing that goes in my garbage that isn't recyclable. And, you know, whether I put, you know, I put stuff out and, you know, I feed the skunks and the crows, all table scraps. I would never, I cringe when I see people throwing chicken bones and that in the garbage. It's not garbage. It's a recyclable product. You got to start putting it in a separate place. And you know, I have crows that, you know, are my buddies by my house. I have skunks that are my friends. And you know, I put stuff out, and they eat all that stuff up, and they poo it out on my lawn and give me fertilizer. And, you know, it doesn't go to the dump. And all my plastics and papers, they get recycled in a good way. But, you know, if we all do our part, it's monumental. But, you know, 90% of the population, I can't give you a percentage. I'm sorry I said that. But there's a good percentage of the population that just doesn't give a rat's ass, and we need to change those people. And say, you know, you just do this little thing. It'll make a world of difference. Because if you have 1% of the population doing it, and then you get it up to 20%, that's monumental. I mean, and it's and like you say with the forest, every time a tree grows, it's helping clean the air, and it's giving us, you know. And
it's not even just trees. It's also the animals.
Well,
I mean,
it's the flowers,
some people,
and the animals.
Natural. If you talk to naturalists in the late 1800s. Like some of my guys I like listen to, like, you know, John Burroughs or Henry Thoreau or even Aldo Leopold, who wrote the Sand County Almanac. These guys fell into the pessimist rabbit hole, and in their context, it made sense. They thought a lot of these mammals will never come back, and they have.
Yeah,
I mean, it's pretty amazing. In fact, they've come back so much that they're, some of them are a problem.
We never had, when I was growing up on the farm, you very rare would have a bear. Fishers were unheard of. You didn't even, you know. Didn't, and they're, I mean, they're back.
1980s, they've come back. It's crazy.
Yeah.
River otter. You know, I could go on and on and on. Bobcats.
Oh, I learned about the, because I, you know, from your guys' of show on foxes, that, you know, a red fox has a white tip and a gray fox has a black tip.
Yeah.
Because I've seen red foxes that are kind of grayish looking.
Yeah.
But now I know to look for the tip of the tail, and I can distinguish them.
I didn't even know red foxes. I always was under this myth that most of them were from Europe. That's not true.
No.
On that show we talked, and I said I almost never see gray fox. I've seen two since that show.
Right. That's amazing.
It's amazing
what you don't notice until some, you know, same thing with some certain streams. I thought they never had fish. Well, I looked and they did. You know?
That's right.
Down by Margaville, by Wayman's, there's a gray fox that lives right around there. And, you know, I just realized that, you know, he has a black tail. I thought it was an off-colored kind of red fox. I seen a gray fox on Margaville Mountain about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right after your show, I said, oh, that's a gray fox.
Well, that's all the time we got, guys.
Oh, come on.
It is, I swear to God. But thanks for listening. This was Black Walnut with Gary Mead. Gary will be on next month, third Wednesday. And have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Peace, everybody.
From the forest, his tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in. From the forest, up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way, getting lost like a fool. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name.
And then he heard the joyful sound of children at the games in an old